Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, episode 72.
Please leave me alone.
Answer the question and I will. What door am I at?
What?
There are two main doors to your house, a front door and the patio doors. If you answer correctly, you live. Very simple.
Don't do this, I can't, I won't.
Your call.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for?
Stealing food now?
Going out now, Mrs. Carmody. Please stand aside.
You can't go out. I won't allow it.
Won't allow it?
It's against God's will. Don't you know that by now? Haven't I proven myself again and again and again? Haven't I shown that I am his vessel? What's the matter with you? Don't you believe in God?
No one's interfered with you. All we're asking for is the same privilege.
You heard him. It is these people who brought this upon us. They, people who refuse to bend to the will of God and claim it privilege. Sinners and pride. Yes, haughty, privileged. They mock us, they mock our God, our faith, our values, our very lifestyle. They mock our humility and our piousness. They piss on us and laugh. It's from them. The blood of human sacrifice must come. From them, the blood of expiation.
You try it. Fucking try it! Come on!
We want the boy!
You
we
get
want
back.
The boy!
Get
you give us your...
You get back! Come on, get out!
Get out! Grab that boy!
Hello and welcome to the Plain Label Podcast. I am your host, Eric Williams, and along with me is my good friend and co-host, Mrs. Rachel Zelag.
What's happening, hot stuff?
In this episode, we are concluding our October theme of horror films, and in this episode, we are going to take a look at horror films from the 90s and beyond.
Thank God for that beyond part.
That right? Beyond is crucial. We are, once again, not alone this time, as we're
You're
joined by Mr. Cameron Rice.
Hello.
And Miss Annelle Strauss.
Hi, friends.
For the films that we're discussing this time, we have Scream, I Know What You Did Last Summer, Them, and The Mist. Before getting into our discussion, we would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to DeliberateNoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. Mrs. Zelag, what are you drinking this fine evening?
I'm drinking a Goose Island Oktoberfest because no matter what Best Buy says, it's still fall and not Christmas.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like that. Cameron.
I'm on vacation, so, coffee and, Kahlua.
Oh, nice.
Jesus.
Strauss, what are we having?
We're having Moscow Mules.
Mm, not on vacation.
What?
Fancy shit.
Yeah, not on vacation. Doesn't matter over here. But, right. So what is it that we're having, Strauss? Like, what is a Moscow Mule?
It's made with vodka, lime juice, and ginger beer.
Yeah.
And it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Super good. We don't have the copper cups.
So. What?
Yeah. Gonna have to put that on the. Gonna have to put that on the old Amazon wish list, I think.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Typically, we were going to go, we'd go chronologically.
We do?
That's the thing that we do. And but we did want to mention something before we went into our first film, which is 1996's Scream. We wanted to talk a little bit about a film that Cameron had suggested that a few of us take a look at, as Wes Craven was the director of Scream. He was also the director of A Nightmare on Elm Street that we did last time, and he directed New Nightmare, the most recent or the latest in the non-reboot Freddy Krueger films.
And non-Freddy vs. Jason.
Yeah, those don't count either. Those don't count. Those don't count in my mind. So what is it that you wanted to say about this one? Because I know that I'd seen it a couple of times. I watched half of it maybe again last night. Strauss watched some of it. I didn't want to impede on Mrs. Zelag's social life, so I didn't have her watch it. But
whoa, don't be a D.
I think for me, what's interesting about New Nightmare is it's everyone talks about Scream, and we'll get into this way more when we actually get into Scream. But people talk about Scream about it being like a real meta horror movie, that it's acknowledging that horror movies exist within the world of Scream. And what's interesting about New Nightmare is New Nightmare was 2 years before Scream, and it does the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The difference being is that the Wes Craven and all these people are like in like the real, like the movie takes place in the real world, quote unquote. So like Wes Craven plays a character, Heather Langenkamp plays herself, Robert Englund is Robert Englund as well as Freddy Krueger. So to me, it's just interesting that it's like, I feel like New Nightmare was, and even though Wes Craven did not write Scream, it was almost that dry run of the meta horror movie thing before jumping into Scream. And I think Scream is a better movie than New Nightmare, but I do, I think the last 45 minutes of New Nightmare are pretty awesome.
Oh, that's what I didn't watch. Sweet.
That's all right. We still have access to it.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, it is I will say very quickly, often people will critically talk about it, like putting it right up there with the first. I don't think it's there. I feel it was a movie that was somewhat constrained because Wes Craven came back to the series and he was, looking at it. Originally they wanted him to come back and see if he could just do a normal part 7. And so he watched all 6 films and he's like, no, there's no way I could do this. But maybe I can come up with this other idea. So he comes up with this other idea. And you can't help but feel, especially in the last 45 minutes, he's never said this, so I don't know. But there's a part of me that almost feels like this could have just been Nancy and her son.
Hmm.
Because all the, quote unquote, this takes place in the real world stuff, which is all the meta stuff, feels a little forced.
When they're in the hospital.
A little bit. And also like, the way Heather Langenkamp is acting as her quote unquote self, she might as well be Nancy, because she almost immediately suspects Freddy Krueger's entered the real world like 10 minutes into the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone is acting really heightened, and I don't think Wes Craven could write kids for shit.
No. The kid, not only is the kid not written well, but he's not particularly strong.
And it could be quote unquote argued that it's like, well, he's in a trance state or something like that. But it's not very good. But like, I think the first 45 minutes actually, to me, for the most part, don't work. It's the last 45 minutes though, where it's all the Freddy Krueger stuff. Robert Englund as this new version of Freddy Krueger, where it's like he's in a trench coat with this new glove. He's got these contacts. It's pretty badass.
Mm-hmm.
And the big murder scene in the hospital is great. It really does feel like the last 45 minutes, like she's not really referred to as, I mean, she's called Mrs. Langenkamp in the hospital, but she might as well just be called Nancy still.
Sure. What about the, what about when the husband gets it? When he's driving and falling asleep.
Yeah, there's moments that I think are very easy to make fun of in this movie too, like the fact that the husband, they specifically say twice that where he is on location is like 3 hours away, and when he leaves it's broad daylight, so I guess he's falling asleep behind the wheel at 7 o'clock at night.
Well, what I liked
just
about
super
that
super tired.
What I liked about that though is I thought that it was it's a complete callback to the bathtub.
Yeah, there's a lot of this movie's full of callbacks to the original, especially in that last 45 minutes. There's a sequence in the end when John Saxon returns. Like John Saxon was the father in the first Nightmare film, when he comes to the house in the very end, and then he's leaving and he transforms into the character from the film. Mm. And Heather Langenkamp walks outside, and when she turns around, she's on Elm Street, and it's Nancy's house.
Mm.
And it's a pretty boss sequence. It is like the first half hour, 45 minutes of the movie. A lot of stuff doesn't work. A lot of stuff is actually pretty cool. But I feel like it's two movies where everyone is acting like they're in a normal Elm Street movie, but you've made the decision to set this in the real world. Now, I'm not saying this needs to be The Wire, you know what I mean, where it needs to be this gritty, realistic thing, but everyone's acting is still super heightened as if they're in a normal Elm Street movie, but it's supposed to be like really them. And there's stuff in this movie that is very much like the Wes Craven stuff I was talking about, where I'm like kind of a little English professor-y stupid, where it's like, did you get as far as the sun standing on the rocket ship and then falling?
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Robert Englund going like, yeah, Wes says the script is as hard as Dylan reaching for heaven, whatever that means.
Hmm.
And I'm just like, but, but again, the last 45 minutes, I would say, like, don't even watch the whole rest. Just, I would say from the tongue phone sequence onward, the movie's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
And also, I think it doesn't help, too, that it's like all these quote-unquote real people are playing them their real selves. And look, horror movies don't have great acting, but Wes Craven, Robert Shea, the producers at New Line who play themselves, can really not act.
Yeah, that's the parts that struck as you know, the easy target is a Lifetime movie, but that's what it strikes me as the very obvious non-professional actors.
Yeah, but there are ideas I like. I do like the sequence when she's on the talk show and then all those kids are dressed as Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, I like that that it's been this abomination that now is celebrated. You know, I like that idea. To where, you know, Freddy was this horrific thing and now it's, you know, the middle of pop culture.
Yeah, and it's also, I this is like a circumstance of like it worked well for the movie. But while they were filming, the Northridge earthquake happened, like in real life, that huge earthquake in 94 in Southern California, where buildings did collapse, freeways collapsed, and all this other stuff. Now, in Nebraska, I don't know, back then in 94 and now, if Northridge is ever something that ever comes up. But in California, it's still like this, where were you when the Northridge quake happened? While filming this movie, it actually, you know, that happened. So there's all these sequences of like Nancy driving around while like Southern California is all fucked up. And that was just that was reality. Wes Craven's like, let's just go film the falling buildings.
Huh.
Oh.
I think, Cruz, you could probably set me straight, but I think the only thing 94 is known for is Nebraska winning a national title. It's the only thing anyone remembers 94 for.
Yeah, I just remember my dad dancing around barefoot in the snow. So
there you go.
There you go. So I think if I had to rank the Elm Street films, it would be, for me, 3 and 1 are tied. It goes 3, 1, 4, 7, 5, 2, 6.
There we go.
Jesus.
Someone repeat that back.
You can get a hold of Cameron at that number.
Yeah.
That should be your, your lot combination for something.
That's true. Pass. So, I think...
What about the remake?
I got to rewatch it. I didn't think it was terrible. I thought it was fine. It had some ideas I liked. The problem with the remake is that it really doubles down where it's like, yeah, he was a pedophile. And I much more preferred it in the original films where it's not fully said. You kind of get that he probably was. But if you don't want to believe it, you can perfectly just sit back and go, no, he just killed the children.
Yeah, I think that
That's all he did.
The casting, I think, was a nice choice.
Yes, but I like Jackie Earle Haley a lot, but he was essentially doing the Rorschach voice.
Yeah, he was. But when I heard that announcement, I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. He looks like, I mean, he's not an attractive man.
Right. And so I think
if you're going to cast a pedophile, he would be a good person.
Well, I think that was the other thing. Is like the thing that was interesting to me about the movie when I saw that remake was that like they almost were at first making it like the parents had made a mistake, that he actually hadn't done anything, and that this was a vengeance story. And I'm like, well, that's very different, but that's interesting at least. And then it is vengeance. And then, you know, they do the switcheroo and double down and go, no, he actually fucked the kids. And you're just like, okay.
I do like that.
And he's got a little photo album of the naked children. You're just like, Jesus, this took the fun out of the character completely.
Yeah, I do like the comment that Wes Craven had on Twitter. Did you see that, Cameron?
No.
It was, which is your least favorite Nightmare on Elm Street? And Wes Craven responded and said the remake. And that was all he said.
Mm. To be fair, I would watch the new remake over Scream 3.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Well, that's a nice little segue. We can get Mrs. Zelag back in the conversation. Let's go ahead and kick off our official discussion, I suppose. And we're going to start with 1996, and the film is Scream.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
Tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Well, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Someone is playing a deadly game.
It all began with a scream over 911.
Someone who's seen one too many scary movies. Now, he's taken his love of fear.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney.
One step too far.
Do you like scary movies?
What's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a scary movie. Number one, you can never have sex.
Me.
Never, ever, ever under any circumstances say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
Get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
He didn't make the rules.
The police are always on track. If they watch prom night, they save time.
He just kills by them. Don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't try to hide.
Everybody's a suspect!
You're not scared, are you?
Scream.
A teenage girl becomes the target of a killer who has stalked and killed one of her classmates. A tabloid news reporter is determined to uncover the truth, insisting the man who raped and killed Campbell's mother 1 year earlier is the same man who is terrorizing her now. Campbell's boyfriend becomes the prime suspect. Wow. God.
Oh, yeah.
These are awful.
That's the good stuff. That's A++. So, yes. Cruz, this one and the next one were your selections. So why don't you hit me with the knowledge as to why you picked Scream and, more importantly, why you couldn't decide between either of these, so you picked them both.
I hadn't seen these for a really long time. Probably since, like, 98.
If you want to pop, I'm hearing myself crazy.
Freddy Krueger / Cameron Rice right there.
I know. I was going to say, and if you want to apologize for your second choice, feel free to do so now.
No, I don't apologize for that.
No,
they kind of just go with my, my themes of like, well, obviously the first one, don't have sex and then you die. And the other one is kind of the same. It's just like, don't do bad things, so they just went with my theme that I was going for.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about Scream. You saw it last in 98, and what did you make of it on the rewatch? Wait a minute. I guess have you been watching like Scary Movie and all of those that start out like Scream and all the Scream sequels and all of that?
No.
Okay.
I vaguely remember the one Scream sequel where they are doing like a movie about it and they have her house on the set. I don't know which one that is.
Hmm.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Three?
Cameron says with disgust.
And then, I mean, the scary movies are just, you know, stupid, but like I've seen.
Stupid.
I mean, that's what they're supposed to be. But I think I've seen a couple of them. I couldn't tell you like which one was which. But I know that they make fun of, this was like, the first Scary Movie was basically making fun of this one, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the combo of that and I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, perfect. We should have watched that instead.
Maybe. So what did you think of this, Cruz?
It was pretty cheesy. It was pretty not cheesy, but there were cheesy parts, but it was really 90s. And I like the whole, you know, deconstructing of the horror film of the guy that works at the movie store, which was a cute little throwback anyway.
Jamie Kennedy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're renting videos. How quaint.
Yeah, I think, now Cameron, we talked about this before, right?
Probably.
I do that too, Cameron.
I feel like
on that movie. We have? All right.
I feel like we did this in the horror group.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been in the slasher group. Maybe Dave wanted to talk about it really badly. So yeah, Scream, I still really like the first Scream. For me, it's like I can't ignore the history of what was going on in horror and film at that time. There's a really good documentary about the making of the whole film and the fact that like in 95, 96, even though we just talked about like New Nightmare came out in 94, but we talked about the last episode of like the 90s was not like a plethora of horror movies.
No.
I mean, there was the occasional film here and there, but I mean, I think like, and this is why when we were doing 90s and Beyond, I was so happy about Beyond because like I was really struggling to try and think of something that wasn't Scream. I was like, okay, what's not Scream, but then also not one of the Scream ripoff-y kind of things? And I almost picked Wolf, the Jack Nicholson movie, which isn't really a horror movie, but that was kind of what was happening in the 90s. It was like, prior to Scream, was like, here's a movie with like horror movie-ish element things. So thank God for Beyond. but I still, and so 95, 96... Kevin Williamson writes this movie.
And got some serious cash for the script.
Yeah, it was a movie, like one of these movies like you hear about where it's like he wrote it on a weekend house sitting for a friend and watching like true murder stories.
Awesome.
Like one of those like e-shows or something. And it was the fact that it was meta, the characters. And now, you know, meta and people talking about movies within movies is so like played out and done. But in this time, you know, we're right outside of leaving Clerks and Mallrats, where characters are talking about Star Wars and comic books and things like that. We're a year away from The Sopranos, where you have mafia people openly talking about having watched The Godfather. And people talk about, you know, what made that interesting at the time was that in movies before that, you kind of just had characters who it's like, oh, they have the same president and they watch the news, but this was like, oh, they really live in your world.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've seen the films you have seen and they know the things you know. And it's also the fact that Scream is like, it's a pretty violent film.
Mm-hmm.
Like it doesn't hide the blood. Like it doesn't like skirt away from blood.
Yeah. It's violent, but it also balances it with really Looney Tunes violence at times too.
It does have Looney Tunes violence, but I will say like the final sequence where those two guys are stabbing each other and they're bleeding all over the place and on the phone and everything. It's I'm not going to say like it's disturbing because it's real, but it is very gory for like a mid 90s horror movie.
Yeah.
And it almost got them an NC-17 because it was so violent at the time. Wes Craven originally wasn't going to do this. These are the interesting like making of things that he was like, I don't know, and so on and so forth. Do I want to still be the horror guy? I think he felt maybe like with New Nightmare, he had said everything he wanted to say as far as like commentary about what horror movies do to society and blah, 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 blah. But then Drew Barrymore had signed on, and Drew Barrymore was supposed to be the Neve Campbell role.
Right, yeah.
Oh, God, that would have ruined it.
And that got him super excited, and he was like, oh, to make a movie with a big star would be kind of interesting, and it would give me cachet and all this other stuff. So he signed on, and then Drew Barrymore was like, actually, I think I will do I'll take the first 10-minute role. And Wes Craven originally was like, I'm going to walk then. He was originally going to walk, and then it ended up going this back-and-forth kind of thing, but then he ended up obviously staying on. And I don't know, like, there's a lot of things about the movie that I think still work. I do like the music in the film.
Yeah, so do I.
And not just like the music, like the Red Right Hand, but also like the score. Like, I love anytime the score just does that whoop kind of thing. And like something dramatic is said.
See, in the beginning part, it was like a cover of Don't Fear the Reaper, which I was like, oh, sweet. I thought that was pretty sweet.
And when you also think about it, like even now, like almost 20 years away from when this movie was made, there's still interesting things that this movie does within horror. The fact that because of the sequels, you now, it's very easy to think of like Neve Campbell and Courtney Cox's characters as like peers and equals. But in the context of this film, it's high school kids and adults. Mm-hmm. And the adults are just as affected as what's going on as the teenagers. And that didn't really happen so much in slasher films. Like maybe an adult would get killed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, right,
they were like most the whole town.
Yeah, they were mostly gone too, like we were saying.
They were mostly gone. But even like if you look at the 80s slasher films, like maybe an adult, or like Wes Craven, like in Nightmare on Elm Street, the mom gets killed, but that's kind of it. It's an adult. In this movie, the adults are in just as much danger as the kids.
Yeah.
Because Henry Winkler, the Fonz, gets it.
Yeah. Why does the principal have to go?
I did say that. I was like, damn, why's the Fonz got to get it? Like, what the hell?
Oh, yeah, the Fonz, the cameraman.
Yeah.
Like, all these adults get it, too.
Oh, yeah, the cameraman. Technically, I wouldn't consider the cameraman an adult, but...
Just because he's got a backwards hat and likes some food. Jesus. Yep. The character of Dewey being a comic... Also, the fact that the character of Dewey lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, comic reliefs don't tend to make it out of slasher movies.
Yeah, that's true.
And the fact that that there's two killers,
mm-hmm.
Which you know now that's the Scream formula. There's always two killers, but at the time it was like, oh my god, you know what I mean? Like it totally blew people away,
right?
So, that it wasn't just one dude. So it's like the whole thing about Billy Loomis and all those like go back and forth, and it's like, oh, it couldn't be him because the guy was there, and there was Billy Loomis and all this other stuff. And it seemed so simple, but at the time it was super clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And the fact that Neve Campbell's character does have sex and doesn't die, and if you think about it in the context of the movie, she has sex with a guy who raped and killed her mother a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Gross.
Yeah, icky.
Yummy.
Couldn't you just tell that he was creepy? Because yeah, like, from you're like, oh, he's creepy. Yeah, and then they're like, no, I'm not creepy, I promise. You're like, I don't believe you. You are creepy.
Yeah, you could tell that not Johnny Depp was up to something from the...
Johnny Depp, step-cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah, his creepy glare.
Oh, yeah. Strauss, what did you think of this movie?
Well, this is definitely, like, the first horror movies I would watch. And I'd watch it a lot with my friends and just freak myself out. So
you legitimately saw the first one first?
Oh, yep. This is
she watched a Scary Movie first. And
no.
Imagine that shit.
Oh my god, wouldn't that be the worst? I think I remember watching Spaceballs before Star Wars though, if we're gonna be honest about it.
There you go. So it's fun to rewatch this one.
Mm-hmm. Was this like a freshman high school film for you?
I think it was younger than that.
Okay. Yeah, this would have been elementary school. Like sixth
grade.
Right,
but I remember I didn't watch scary movies until like... Well,
I definitely watched scary movies too young. Sixth grade sounds about right. Like, I saw it right when it came out.
Okay. I remember
blurry pay-per-view.
Oh, I remember like junior high sleepovers were like these two movies for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I definitely watched them first with my parents.
Interesting.
They're great.
Definitely. I definitely watched them first with my parents. Of course I did.
Yeah. And the part where the two killers are stabbing each other, mm-hmm. that part really always stuck out to me. I can't remember the non-Johnny Depp guy.
Matthew Lillard.
Skeet Ulrich.
The other one.
Yeah, Matthew Lillard.
Okay. Where he's like, you cut me too deep, man.
Like, yeah. Well, the line I always remember is like, hit me with the phone, dick!
Yeah, just that guy's agony has just always stuck with me. I thought he played that part really well.
You know what's interesting is we definitely...
I'm dying.
I'm dying here. We have talked about this because I remember using the Skeet Ulrich joke before, Cameron. But... and I remember saying,
recycler.
Yeah, I know. I have limited jokes.
You got a Jerry Seinfeld bet now. You got to put it in the grave. You heard it for the last time.
But, I also do remember saying that when I first watched this, which is around when it came out, I really thought Matthew Lillard was so funny.
I know.
I just thought he was so funny. And then when I watch it now, I'm like, ugh.
Obnoxious.
Yeah, so like,
oh my god, I had the same reaction.
Yeah, I watch it and I'm just like, oh, just shut your stupid face. Like, yeah. Doing all the face, pulling all the faces. And
you
I'm like,
oh. I thought I would mind that on this watch. I don't. And I think maybe it's because I'm watching so many horror movies this month and so many slasher movies. There's always that character.
Well,
there
at
is
least
almost always the annoying character.
It's also, isn't it typically though, the annoying guy is also supposed to be the comic relief, isn't he?
Yeah, but in this case, I don't know. I would almost say Jamie Kennedy might be the comic relief.
Right. And so in this case, it is different because typically the comic relief, like you mentioned with Dewey, gets killed. And here, not only does he not get killed, but he's also the killer.
And it's actually worth noting, Dewey was supposed to get killed, and then while filming, they're like, oh, we really like David Arquette, let's keep him around. Which, the only reason that's worth noting is because he has, like, no reaction that his sister died.
Yeah.
And that's
Tatum
why.
Tatum killed. Let's talk about Tatum for a second. So, she's killed in the garage, which is the most, like, that's the most ridiculous death of the deaths.
Right.
If you look at the, like, I don't know if it's deleted scenes or documentary or something, but when that was a scene that had to be edited down to avoid an NC-17, her head gets crushed between the door and the garage.
Oh, really?
So and because that had to be edited.
That super fake smushed.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's like a puppet head that, like, gets pushed two different ways. It kind of reminds me of in the first Mission Impossible when you see the blades go into the Emilio Estevez dummy head.
Oh, right. Yes.
So good. But they had to cut that out. So that's why it just looks like it's like, how did she die?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's like the best garage door motor ever.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was like, how would that kill someone?
I mean, even if she's tiny, she's like 90 pounds. I don't think a garage door.
This is the 90s. All those pounds are in the boops.
And everything
is the 90s.
Was built really well then.
Yeah. It's all about Tim the Toolman Taylor, more power.
Yeah.
America, is that what you're doing right now, Strauss?
Yep. America was better in the 90s.
I guess.
Yeah, so what I'm getting to is she's killed. She's just hanging there, right?
Mm-hmm.
All these people are leaving, and they just don't see her. Because they're just
wasted, man. So drunk.
Well, like, they're all, I get that they're all, like, taken off, and they're scared at one point, I believe. But she would just be there just hanging, and no one even, you know, there's just no reaction whatsoever. And you have Gail and Dewey just, like, walking around after she's been killed.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, hey, you want to go check out this car and all this, not knowing that there should be his sister just hanging out in the background, like, dead.
I'm fine with it.
So I thought that...
Maybe
I know,
it was dark. I'm fine with it.
It doesn't really bother me, but I was just like, God, why? That's weird. Like, I just don't understand why it wasn't ever, you know, no one ever walked by and really saw her till much later.
Do you know what bothered me is, like, he goes through this spiel about not being a dick because you'll get killed in movies, you know, horror movies. And then he gets a phone call from someone saying that the principal got killed, whoever that someone was. And then the four guys take off to, like, go see his dead body.
Right.
Like, I hope they got in a car accident and died on the way there just out of sheer being assholes. Because, like, I guess even in high school, if someone told me my principal got stabbed, I wouldn't be like, sweet!
Yeah, and he's hanging from the goalpost.
Yeah, now right. Who did that?
Who called him?
Like, how long? That's the thing where it's like, where were Billy and Matthew Lillard at?
Somebody must have called the house. Like, one of them must have, I guess. But I guess but he talked to them like it was a normal person. I have no idea.
That's one of the timelines things where I was like, well, I wonder when this would have happened, because aren't we with them most of the time? I mean, it doesn't matter, but
right.
It's just a thing where I'm like, whatever. Like, I don't know. I guess they needed to get the people out of there for
right. Everybody has to leave. Like, obviously, there'd be a few stragglers like, where's the rest of the beat? Like, I wouldn't leave, you know.
They could have just had Ghostface could have just came in there and just stabbed some fools on his way to try to get Jamie Kennedy. It'd have been fine.
Right.
I want to talk about the fact that I love that Ghostface is like, in all the sequels, they go into this too. Like, because it's constantly a different person, it always ends up being like a teenager or an older person in the sequels. Like, and they're not an expert killer. Ghostface is always like portrayed as being super clumsy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the Looney Tunes thing.
Always tripping, getting hit in the head with like flower pots.
Or the freezer door.
Oh, and they're like, so good.
Oh!
Yeah, when she's throwing the bottles of beer and calling him a dick and stuff.
Yeah. At least she fought back.
Yeah.
We also got to talk about the voice. That voice is so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that too.
And the fact that they've kept that through four films.
That is really good. That whole opening scene, I'm with the consensus that having Drew Barrymore actually be killed and be killed in a horrific way added a lot to, like, holy shit, what is this movie going to be about?
And it jumps back to what we were saying about Nightmare, the last episode, was that, like, the movie's immediately a horror movie, like, right away.
Yes. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, Strauss definitely is not into the slow build as much. She likes being thrown, like,
yeah,
right in there.
I just want to be, like, clinching and trying to plug my ears, and I'm not good with the sounds, so sometimes I'll plug my ears and just watch.
That is really funny.
I know.
Whenever I watch this, though, I always, like, because I've seen it so many times, I'm always like, well, what if she, like, doesn't buy into, like, you know, him talking and, like, you know, like, when they call on the phone, like, everything has to work out where he's like, your boyfriend's out on the front porch. And I would be like, fuck you, and, like, go to bed. So, like, yeah, it wouldn't be nearly as fun. So I always, like, think about that when they call, like, everything has to work out just right for it to be, like, the ultimate scare. And I mean, obviously it does because it's a movie, but I always think about stuff like that. Like, what if they're just like, I'm busy watching a movie, bye, whoever you are, and then, like, hang up.
Yeah, just unplug the phone.
Right.
Yeah,
I was thinking about the horror of the side things, like the fact that Drew Barrymore's mom hears her getting killed on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know
how horrific that is?
I said to Anel, I was like, why doesn't she just fucking throw the phone at her mom?
Yeah,
like,
when she's right next to her.
Yeah!
She doesn't breathe. Just throw it onto the porch and they'll hear it.
It's one of those where you're
being... Let me stab you in the shoulder blade, see how well your throwing arm is then.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're being murdered, and I get that you're probably not right of mind, but it's like...
There might be a bit of panic. There might be a little bit of panic.
The adrenaline kicks in, and you like just get up and sprint to the front door.
Yeah, I feel like my adrenaline's off the charts. I'd be good.
There we go. We're not gonna try it out.
No.
But she'd be fine, she thinks.
Go into Tasmanian devil mode.
No, yeah. If somebody attacks us, Eric, I will get it. Yeah. I'm good.
Sweet.
Nice.
I'm a backseat survivalist.
Yeah, I'm not mad about it at all.
I'll use keys, wine keys, pencils. I'll get them. Whatever I've got on.
There we go. All right, well, does anybody else have anything to say about Scream before we move on?
I would say the timing of this actually worked out because today, a couple hours ago, it was announced that MTV had picked up to do Scream as a TV series.
Mm.
What?
For one season, 10 episodes, and Wes Craven is producing and helping with the creation of it.
Huh.
How do you do it as a TV series?
I don't know.
Just have, when he drops out down from the bathroom at the school, and then you cut next episode.
I'm fine with it. I'm into it. I actually enjoyed Scream 4. Scream 3 is something someone made.
I think I only made it through the second one. I don't think I've seen the other ones.
Two's okay. Two's okay. Pretty good.
That's with it's with the mom, right?
Yeah. Oh, I do want to talk about Cotton
Weary.
Liev Schreiber.
Yeah, yeah. How does Liev Schreiber take that role? He doesn't do anything in the first movie.
Because it's 1996 and he doesn't have a career.
Yeah.
So.
He wasn't Sabretooth yet.
What a terrible movie that is.
So give the guy a break. But Cotton Leary does become a character in 2 and 3.
Which was the sequel they were doing a play. And
that was 3, right?
3 was they're filming a movie. So this is the other thing. It's very interesting to me that the series as a whole is completely kicked off by the fact that it's like, your mom sleeps around.
Mm-hmm.
And that is throughout, like, until part 4, that is what all the sequels are about. Like, part 3, the killer ends up being like, Sydney's brother she never knew she had.
Yeah. That's because why you know bang other people.
Around.
See? The whole series could have been avoided.
So
if
it was like a
bang other people.
It was like a town whore, like, how to weed them out, or what?
Village bicycle. Everybody gets a ride.
Yeah. Even the Fonz.
Bro.
But that's the kind of the interesting thing about the Cotton Leary character, is it also shows that it's like this young girl made a huge mistake and put a man on death row.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awkward. She's like, awkward, sorry.
I know. So there's a lot of interesting, I think, elements at play in Scream beyond just the main storyline that I think – and that's kind of what makes this first one, I think, still work. It's also we're going to talk about one of the other films a little bit later, but I think, like, it's edited really well. Like, Wes Craven knows how to edit a film, like, at the perfect jump point. Like to me, the moment when Sydney's on the phone and she goes, okay, I'm going to hang up, bye. And then the guy goes, if you hang up on me again, I'll kill you like I killed your mother. And then it does this immediate cut to a close-up on her face. And that's, like, film language. It's really, like, dramatic and well done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that it's one of the things, and well, I'm assuming we're going to get into it, but it's one of those things where when it's done well, you, like, I don't necessarily notice it.
Yeah, wouldn't have noticed that, but when it's done, appreciate it.
When it's done poorly, I'm like, oh, that didn't ring true at all.
Right.
That
didn't. Yeah. It also might be because I edit things. I know, like, right. Those things. I was like, ooh, that's a great cut.
Yeah, but you bringing that up, I totally remember that part.
Oh, yeah.
And that had a big impact.
It's like her reaction.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Well, let's move on. Let's move on to Rachel's other pick. Hi. It is from 1997, the following year, and it is I Know What You Did Last Summer.
So the boy and girl are making out, right? When they hear over the radio that this lunatic killer's escaped from an insane asylum.
That's not the way it goes. The boy goes for help, and the girl stays in the car, and she hears this, like, scratching sound.
No, he's been decapitated. No, he was gutted with a hook.
Oh my God.
You think he's dead?
We can't just leave him here.
Oh, tell me, little Miss Prelaw, what's the charge for manslaughter? We make a pact. Right here, now we take the Tsar grave.
For the last year, four friends have kept a secret.
Are you on drugs?
No.
Well, then what is wrong? I've had a rough year.
But not all secrets stay buried.
Somebody sent this to me.
Oh my God.
Someone knows.
I know what you did last summer. Ooh.
What they thought would be a new beginning.
Toast to us.
Is becoming a dead end.
Somebody tried to kill you last night. We have to go to the police.
If he wanted me dead, he could have done it.
And the mistake they made.
It was an accident.
There was no accident. It was murder.
What if he's still alive? Hey!
What are you doing here?
Is coming back to haunt them.
Oh my God.
He's after me too.
I got a letter.
I got run over. Helen gets her hair chopped off. Ah! Julie gets a body in a trunk and you get a letter? That's balanced.
She's waiting for us to unravel.
The wait is over.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for?
Hello?
You did last summer.
When four friends accidentally hit and kill a man on a road at night, they start to panic and decide to dump the body into the sea. A year later, they all try to settle down again, but one of the friends receives a note in the post with the words, I know what you did last summer, British people. As each of the friends gain their own reminder, they finally accept the one thing they feared the most. Someone knows what happened that night, and now they're out for revenge.
All right, so
I want to give the real summary, and along with most other horror movies, after Scream, a bunch of movie studios looked around and said, "What else we got?
What else can we do that's screamish?
Screamy,
screamy." So, Cruz, why did you? What was the deal with you and Jennifer Love Hewitt in this film?
I mean, both of these are just kind of like, I hadn't seen it for a really long time and I just kind of wanted to rewatch it, and it was almost like, kind of nostalgic just rewatching these, both of these.
Hmm.
It really made me want to go, what's that other movie from the late 90s?
Urban
Legend. She's All That.
Time. Oh.
She's All That.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That, watching this made me want to go watch that.
Wait a minute. She's All That or Can't Hardly Wait?
Can't Hardly Wait is amazing, and I've
I'll
seen
stand
that
by Can't Hardly Wait.
Times because sure. It's one of the DVDs that I own. but no, She's All That with Freddie Prinze Jr. in it, where she's like the nerd or whatever.
Oh, right.
Like, I'm gonna have to dig that up somewhere. Like, I don't own it, but I'll have to find it somewhere and watch it, because that's what makes me want to watch this.
Let me know and I'll watch it with you.
All right.
I will
and,
take a pass.
And Matthew Lillard.
Yeah.
See? There we go. Late 90s when I was just wearing the worst clothes. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, obviously rewatching this, it was like, I remember why I haven't watched it for a long time.
Yes.
And I was just, there are a lot of eye rolls, in this business. I did appreciate Ryan Felipe not wearing a shirt, but I mean, that's just kind of a given for me. And, or Felipe, how do you say his name? I always say Felipe.
Felipe.
Ryan Felipe is how I say it.
I say it like, like that. That's how I say it.
I believe it's French, so it's Felipe.
But yeah, I mean, I watched this again and I don't plan on watching it again in the near future, but it was a nice little, hour and a half of nostalgia. So it was what it was.
Okay. Strauss, let's go to you next. What did you think of this?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say these two are going to be ones that when Anna gets older, I'll be like, these were the jam when I was your age. And she is just going to think it's the stupidest thing around, but I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't wait to show her these. Because, yeah, same with you. It was very nostalgic for me. Yeah, a lot of eye rolling.
I'm like, oh, I remember wearing overalls.
Yeah, and I remember how cute Freddie Prinze Jr. used to be to me.
I know. Oh, same here.
So cute.
Glad that you think the same.
So, yeah, it was just fun. I don't know.
I agree.
Can't say a lot about, like, the filming or that. It was just a fun rewatch for me.
Right. Well, I don't think anyone can say a lot about the filming. I do have a fun family side story for this. My cousin was little and she saw the preview for this and then she told her mom a couple weeks later that she was afraid of hookers because but she called the dude with the hook hand and my aunt was like, how do you know what those are? And like, she freaked out for a little bit till she realized what was going on. So it was a good one.
Cause in the Cruise household and family, you never know.
You really don't. I mean, it could be anything. So,
if you've ever been to a Cruise tailgate, it could be any number of reasons why she knows that.
I have nothing to do with it.
That's true. Okay, so I watched this, shortly after it came out on either VHS. I guess it had to have been VHS, right?
Sure.
And, I don't know. I guess I liked it at the time well enough. I thought Jennifer Love Hewitt was hot.
Oh yeah, you did.
And and so I remember it for that, but I hadn't watched it since. And I see like the cover of the film or the movie poster, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. That's the sort of Scream like one with Jennifer Love Hewitt and Buffy and the 90s guys.
Yeah, basically.
And so on the rewatch, I was like, oh boy, this was a rough go. This was one where I was like, huh, oh man, because we have such silly things like, you have Sidney Prescott being played by Jennifer Love Hewitt for the most part.
Sidney Prescott was Neve Campbell.
No. I know. I'm right. Saying Jennifer Love Hewitt's basically playing that character.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got your brunette, like very beautiful, but like very brainy, snarky.
Super smart. That's super what I think smart. When I think of Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yeah, and I was going to say that I think Neve Campbell can pull it off. I don't think that Jennifer Love Hewitt can pull that role off.
This was the thing that Scream kicked off. Was Scream kicked off like, whereas in the 80s you had a bunch of people starring in these movies and slasher films where you're like, I don't know who that is. And occasionally you would get a Johnny Depp or a Kevin Bacon where you'd be like, oh, this is the first movie. Scream kicked off, oh, just get a TV actor. And occasionally you would have that discovery thing where it's like, Jamie Kennedy and these guys were not on anything before Scream, then they do Scream. But Neve Campbell was on – I know, right? although Matthew Lillard was in the Descendants.
Oh, yeah. Funny.
To be fair. And Jamie Kennedy, I think he does stand up.
Jamie Kennedy experience or experiment or whatever and
whatever.
Mask 2 and oh yeah.
The Mask 2. But yeah, so like after Scream, it's like, oh, you can just get a recognizable TV star. And that's interesting and it's not bad because unlike the 80s, you had no idea who these people were. So there was something interesting about 90s slasher films being like, you recognize these people because they're in your house every week on TV playing likable people, but you had Yeah, Neve Campbell, Party of Five. Jennifer Love Hewitt, Party of Five. Urban Legend had Joshua Jackson from Dawson's Creek. Valentine had David Boreanaz. So, like, the Scream really kicked off this, like, oh, you don't need recognizable stars. And that's interesting. But I think, like, so I'll get into it. My thing with I Know What You Did Last Summer, I'm being snarky, but it's like, I don't hate the movie, but, like, there's nothing about it that stands out. Unlike Scream, where there's these comic characters and these adults and all these kind of, like, little interesting things. The most interesting thing about I Know What You Did Last Summer is Anne Heche is in it, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's good in it, too. I think
yes,
she is. I like that. I like those sequences a lot.
But, like, for the most part, like, this feels like Scream's dumb little cousin. And I think I can't quite put my finger on it, but I feel like 80s slasher films have this sense of fun to them. And I don't know if it's just the 80s-ness of it. It might be, but I feel like in contrast to 90s slasher films, like 90s slasher films seem to think they were serious movies.
No, they're angsty as fuck. That's
like,
what's going
Ryan
on.
Ryan Phillippe thought he was going to be in a Shakespeare play, apparently. Like, he is so brooding and so and upset.
He's very, very big.
Freddie Prinze Jr. has, like, the puppy dog thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
He looks like he is, like, a dialogue line or two away from, like, having, like, the Demi Moore tear run down his face. Sarah Michelle Gellar's interesting, but the most interesting thing about I Know What You Did Last Summer is she gets put in a fucking trunk with crabs. Like, that's the crabs killer. Like, there's not that sense of fun. And, like, 80s slasher movies from, like, the biggest well-known ones to the stupidest ones, like, their sense of silliness and fun, like, they knew what they were making. And I think the fact that Wes Craven made Scream, and it's interesting to note that I Know You Did Last Summer was also written by Kevin Williams, and it's the same screenwriter.
Yeah, it's the movie that he did before Scream, and it didn't get sold till after Scream came out.
Yeah, and, like, I don't have much to say about I Know What You Did Last Summer, because I'm like, there's no interesting making-of stories. It's nothing stands out about it to me. What stands out about it is, like, oh, these are the people, what they look like in 1997.
Yeah.
And I can do that by Google searching.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the only thing that I guess is interesting to me is, you know, this is Sarah Michelle Gellar gets cast as Buffy after this, which is a completely different character. Which is,
you
look at her
in Scream 2.
Yeah, you look at her in this and you're like, oh, wow, that's not the sort of character I know her as, you know, as being this sort of superficial blonde. I don't know. I mean, I just had, like, all these just, like, shitty little comments throughout the film. You know?
I mean, the thing everyone remembers from this movie is, like, what are you waiting for, huh? That's the one thing.
Oh, the what are you waiting for, yeah.
Which was, I mean, that I do remember that, and then I watched it now, and I'm like, why is she yelling? She needs to calm. Like, I just felt like it was out of context there, too.
What's great is they clearly feel like that's an iconic moment because they do it again, and I still know what you did last summer.
Ugh.
They're like,
they do it in Scary Movie, too, I think. She says, what are you waiting for? And then I think the guy, like, pees off the roof or something, so.
Yeah.
I saw that they're making a remake of this.
Really?
Interesting.
With who?
Interesting choice. They did I Still Know, and they did I'll Always Know, and they're doing a remake of this, I guess.
They should do one where it's like, I forgot what you did last summer.
Can you remind me what you did last summer?
Yeah.
And I don't mind the idea of, like, Killer Hook Hand, who's, like, pissed off and wants vengeance. So many slasher films are about, like, vengeance. I think that's kind of the interesting thing also about Freddy, is Freddy's, like, the one character, like, it's vengeance, but he was already evil before that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, so many slasher films were like, he was an innocent, or he was bullied, and then they burned him or hurt him, and now he's back for revenge. But, like, I think that's the thing, is, like, the character is an interesting silhouette, he's interesting looking, and, like, so he kind of stands out because of the hook and the rain slicker, and I do like the parade scene with all the people in rain slickers, like, that's fairly clever.
Well, yeah, when it's set, it's like 85 degrees and they're all wearing these rain slickers.
Yeah.
They just got off the boat. God.
Yeah, leave
them alone. It's just little stuff like that. Like, it couldn't have been, you know, they couldn't have made it look like it was cooler.
Yeah.
What the fuck are they wearing all the slickers
it's
for?
It's 4th of July.
It's the middle of the goddamn summer and you gotta have the hat on? Jeez.
Well.
That's my sticking point. That's the thing I didn't like. Yeah.
Also, he really should have ruined Sarah Michelle Gellar's hair. I want her to wake up and like he shaved off like her eyebrows.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I said. Okay, when she wakes up, it is chopped above her ear. She gets on the float and it's like this perfect bob. That's not how it was.
Because you can't have an ugly chick die in a 90s horror movie.
And what's funny is they make the comment to where they're like, "Oh, nice hair, nice haircut." You're like, what the fuck's wrong with it? It looks perfect.
Right, it's a generally nice haircut.
Yeah, it does look good.
I stand by, he should have shaved off like one eyebrow.
Yes. I think, yeah, he should have done like a buzz on one side.
That'd be amazing. Like a little mohawk for the crown.
And Jennifer Love Hewitt's character comes home from college and she's all like dressing like a Mormon, just like,
right.
You know, just head to toe covered.
Black circles under her eyes.
Yeah, and then 2 days later, not even a day later, her boobs are out, she's wearing a short skirt, and she's ready to kick some ass. Yeah,
it's summer, she's doing that creepy side-to-side eye thing that she does.
Oh, yes. But, it looks like the I'm reading a teleprompter look.
Yes.
I think that's the difference, is like, I can't hardly wait. She is like the dream girl, thing of desire, but she doesn't have that much dialogue. Like, she doesn't have to do much to carry that role. And
she's
can't hardly wait.
Thing in that one.
She does, but she's like, she doesn't have to do much. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she just kind of has to be there and like smile and seem nice. But in this movie, like, this character's supposed to have a sense of guilt. You killed a man. You killed a man. And you got away with it. And her sense of guilt is like, I'm gonna button up my shirt.
Right.
Get out of here.
I'm gonna button my guilt away.
Well, she was almost failing out of school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Almost. I want to see her, like, at home being like, and her mom being like, why don't you go back to school?
Yeah.
You know, apparently all of those kids, though, had it better than Sarah Michelle Gellar's older sister, Bridget Wilson Sampras, who was in Billy Madison.
Oh, I know who. Veronica Vaughn.
Yeah, and because she's apparently like in her mid to late 20s in the film, probably, and she's working at the hardware store and I guess living at home still.
Okay, she's running the store.
Right, but she's still living with like the family home.
Right, and also dressing like a Mormon because she's smoking hot too. Like,
right,
I don't know why they didn't let her put her boobs out. Bullshit.
I far more believe the guilt of the parents on Elm Street who killed a child murderer than I do these four individuals.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Well, Ryan Felipe doesn't feel bad at all. Are you serious? Or Philippi, whatever the fuck it is.
I was just walking around with his wife beater and his open white shirt. Being
all
pissed.
And
his
chain.
Yeah, his poser tags. His poser army.
Yes! That was another thing I thought. I'm like, where the fuck did he get those dog tags?
Yeah,
really?
Why? He doesn't deserve
it. Because he's a tough guy.
He probably got them from Old Navy. They used to sell those.
You know what's funny, though, is they have that short little sequence of him kickboxing and doing all that.
I remember.
And so, you figure you plant that seed, it's going to come back, right? No. You know, they show him being a tough guy. So how is he killed? Mostly off screen. You see his reactions to getting stabbed like twice, and that's it.
He should be like kicking and.
Yeah, you don't. I mean, you don't ever have anyone that's physically challenging just a regular dude that has a weapon.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He was like, about as physically imposing as Chris O'Donnell in Batman Forever when he beats up his laundry.
Yeah, when he's like whipping it around.
That's how you know he knows how to fight.
God, I hated that sequence. I hated that movie. Ugh.
Yeah.
Puke. Okay.
So for me, it's like if I want to watch a Ryan Felipe movie, I'll go watch Cruel Intentions where he plays like a sociopath.
God, that's sexy. That is a
And then Sarah Michelle Gellar's like, if you do this thing, I'll let you put it anywhere. And I'm like, ew.
Oh, yeah. I don't mean oh, yeah, like that. That came out wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I meant oh, yeah. I forgot she was also in that movie. Do not take that any other way than
Cruz is like, oh, hey, now I know what I'm going to say to Brad tonight.
My God. You.
All right. Well, I think that's enough.
I think we're done with that now.
Segue.
On that note.
Has anyone seen the sequel besides me?
I've seen it. It's terrible.
With Rastafari and Jack Black.
It's not good at all.
No, I haven't.
I don't think I'd have.
Whew.
Don't bother.
All right. Is Freddie Prinze Jr. in it?
Look at you guys.
Oh, yeah. He's all mad. He's on a boat. Like, Jennifer Love Hewitt goes to, like, the Bahamas with Adam. He's like, I'm coming to get you. He's on a boat.
Oh, my God. I do think I've seen that. Is that the end where she gets pulled under the bed?
Yeah. And then, like, Mekhi Phifer gets, like, a hook in the mouth and dragged up to the ceiling, and his head does not come into, which it should.
Doesn't someone die in a tanning bed in that?
No. He traps Jennifer Love Hewitt in a tanning bed, puts it on full power, and then they all come in, and then he leaves, because, you know, you don't want to see her die, even though you're out for vengeance, you dummy.
Well, I mean, like, props to her for trying not to be pasty.
I guess so.
And yes, I have seen that one.
And then, but then, like, the whole group comes in, and they're like, oh, my God, because he traps her in the tanning bed with, like, a belt or something. And rather than unplug the tanning bed, they hit it with an axe.
Wow.
Ugh.
Wow. What do you mean? That's
a typical stupid scary movie.
Yeah.
You don't do the most obvious things.
I think at least we can all say that none of us have watched I'll Always Knew It. I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer.
Cameron might have.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yay! Go us! Go team!
Same director.
We grew up.
That one's the same director as The Losers.
Oh.
It's probably like 2003, and I'm like, dude, I got some other shit to do. I gotta watch Old School.
Even I don't remember what they did last summer, because I'm not gonna watch it.
Okay, well, let's move on to another film that's probably mostly unwatched by a lot of people. And it is from 2006, and it is a French film called Them.
Allô? Allô?
In the still of the night, we hear things. We see things. We imagine things that aren't always there. But tonight, your imagination isn't playing tricks. And neither are they. Europe is coming to America.
Somewhere in Romania, that is not where a semicolon goes, Clementine is finishing her day of teaching the local kids French. On her way home, she spots an abandoned vehicle beside the road. She continues on, unaware of what happened to its occupants, a mother and her teenage daughter, the night before. Not that it matters, as tonight, along with her rider, Beau Lucas, she'll find out firsthand. They're awakened during the night by strange phone calls and the TV downstairs being turned on. But this is only beginning of their night of terror as the phone lines go dead, the power goes out, and their car goes missing as they're stalked and set upon by them.
Mm. I was hoping for a them!
Them! Like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Cruz, I picked this specifically for you.
I really appreciate that.
Because we, you know, did horror once upon a time before.
Yeah, we did.
And one of the films that we discussed was The Strangers.
Scariest movie of all time.
And this film was the basis of what they did, The Strangers. Like, this was the general idea that they went with.
Sure.
When they made The Strangers. So I figured, okay, well, I haven't seen this movie. Once upon a time when we were discussing what we were going to do in these decade breakdowns, I was going to do all foreign films. This was the first one that I selected of those all foreign films, and then I kind of backtracked from that idea.
Oh, I see.
And I was really giddy going into it, like, oh yeah, this is really going to fuck Cruise's shit up.
This is going to be
this is going to be hilarious.
Oh my god, she's going to lose days of sleep. Ha ha.
Yeah. That's how it goes on the show. So I watched it, and while I thought there was parts that worked fine, I was pretty disappointed. I think that...
Can we spoil this? I know it's like a movie not many people have seen, but can
sure,
we spoil spoilers
absolutely,
on?
Absolutely.
Okay, go on.
I was going to say that, you know, I think the setup is fine. I think that the initial scares are... I think that the opening sequence is probably the most effective scare for me.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Mama!
Yeah. And yeah. Like, Mama. The bushes.
Yeah, she's going back behind the vehicle in the bushes and looking around. You know, that Anel was freaking out.
Oh,
it was
jumping at everything.
It was, and I'm just sitting there licking my chops going, oh, Cruise is going to hate this shit.
I even said that too. I was like, oh man, she's not going to like this one.
And so I was thinking, oh fuck yeah, this is the stuff. And from then on, I don't think I was scared once. I was dozing off during parts.
Yeah, I got scared still.
I
like jumpy stuff.
It was just...
But it wasn't...
It was so clearly, like, not a menacing threat. It was just like, oh, there's these kids.
Babies! They're babies!
Yeah, kick them in the face or something.
Ninja Turtles 2 right there. That's a quote.
Yeah, the noise maker.
Uh-huh, the rattle thing.
Noisemaker.
Okay, so some of the parts of this movie I did like. So I really was scared by the beginning part. And I bought this on Amazon or rented it or whatever.
Sure.
And it said the movie that like shook up in all of Europe or something, and I'm like, shit, if people in Europe can't handle this, how the hell am I supposed to? So like I was like mentally preparing for some scary shit. And, you know, that, like you said, that first scene did not disappoint me at all. I was like, oh my god, they have the keys and they're unlocking the door while she's locking the door. And I'm like, oh god. And so that scared me. And then, you know, they have the lull where we meet the nice, generic, pretty European lady, and she goes home to her boyfriend, and they live in the middle of nowhere in a house that's under construction, which I thought the house was pretty sweet.
Okay.
I said
real quick,
hell
Cruise.
No to that house.
Yeah. And Elle said, no way to that house. And I said, why the fuck is it so big?
Yeah. Right, it's huge.
There's just the two of them.
It looks like the house on Meet the Robinsons.
Can you imagine the utilities in that place?
Oh my god.
You gotta
well, not
heat
if the power keeps getting cut.
We're gonna have to get a fucking maid.
Yeah.
I'm not dusting that shit.
Jeez.
Oh my god.
Unbelievable.
But I think I got kind of the same thing you did, because the strangers just scared me so much that like the scenes where like they walk and there's just somebody in the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's the scary stuff for me. What I did like about this one though was that they didn't show faces until like the very end, and then by that time they had almost lost me anyway. But I liked at the beginning, you know, where they just show like a hood or like shoes, and they don't make noise. They said mom, but like they use the noisemaker, you know, and it's not like talking. And like the further away from a human it is, or like from a, you know, someone that has like an actual personality, the scarier it is to me. And so like I liked that part of it, but I guess the end, since we're spoiling, I didn't understand how they ended up down a well in a cave. I guess the whole like little kid thing, I just didn't understand what all that was about, but.
Well, I think what The Strangers does that's so successful is it's people, but they're wearing masks.
That are horrifying.
Which is just makes them like, what are they? They're setting out to do something really odd.
Right. Ominous.
Yeah. And, you know, the knocking on the door and is Tina home?
Yeah. Well, oh, that, stop it. Stop it.
That stuff fucking freaks me out still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when they're just, when it's just like kids fucking with you, it's like, well, come here, you little fucker. Like, right. You know what I mean? Like, you fuck with me. Like, you know, it's not the same sort of scary. It's not a, ooh, what are they going to do? It's just like, oh, this little kid's pestering me.
Yeah, as soon as they found out he was kids, like, I don't understand why he didn't just, like, knock them all in the head and, like, I don't know. I mean, I thought maybe there were more. Like, there was, like, a horde of children, maybe. But it turned out to be, like, 4 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
I also had a connection with strangers, even though we're talking about them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
After I had Anna, this was Strangers was the first movie I watched, scary movie. And, like, she was still very, very young, and I just think I had way too many hormones. And so when I watched that movie...
Just crying for 2 hours.
It was terrifying. Like,
it is terrifying.
I literally just sat there. I couldn't move. You're like home. A petrified, scared. I slept with the lights on for like a week. it was just bad. It was not a good way to be like...
The bad idea was
and
that...
And, like, I had something that I, like, loved unconditionally, and I was like, these are just the most horrible people in the world. Oh, my God.
Well, the idea that you were watching that is where you went wrong. Well, like, oh, well, I just had a child. I'll watch this scary movie.
You know, I hadn't seen one in so long. I was excited. It was a really bad idea, and I didn't watch one for another year after it. But then, so, for them, with Eric saying that was based off of... The Strangers was based off of that.
Right.
I was super excited. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm into this whole scary movie thing now, and that terrified me so much. I guess I just wanted more of an emotional, like, connection with it, like I had with that other one, but I can't ever get that connection again. So I was also already let down by that, but it was still fun. I jumped at the parts that I needed to jump at, but overall it wasn't as impactful as...
Well, what's funny, too, is that, you know, while we're watching it, like, you know, she's, like, grabbing my arm and acting all scared. And then after, she was like, you know what? I think I was just, like, trying to let it get to me
more than I was
actually scared.
Yeah.
You know, you're just, like, wanting it to impact you so much. And then when it doesn't, you're like, in retrospect, that wasn't really that scary. So, Cameron, you've been pretty quiet. What did you make of them?
That's fine.
I love it.
I don't know. I think, like, there are, you know, things that are interesting about it, and I get a lot of the ideas, but I think at the end of the day, I have no emotional connection to these two people who are going through this.
Yeah.
And I literally, if you were to ask me, what could you tell me about them? I'm like, they're French, attractive, one's a teacher and one's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I could literally tell you nothing else. And I could see maybe the writery idea of that being like, oh, if we make them complete blank slates, you could imagine yourself within them. Cause you know, you can make, this could be you.
Oh, just two people at home.
You know,
I'm not French.
I could be at home. but the problem is like, I was thinking about the movie, The Descent.
Oh, yes. The
cave diving movie.
Boy,
it's so good.
That movie works because you have emotional connections to that main female character. You see what happens to her husband, her trauma. You understand story-wise her having to go into that cave. If that movie had just opened with them going into the cave, it would still be well-shot, scary little monster movie, but you wouldn't have the emotional connection. The reason Die Hard does not open up with Hans Gruber shooting Mr. Tanaka in the head and McClane running upstairs is because then you're just like, I have no emotional connection. This is a frightening idea, but I have nothing to put into this. I have nothing to connect to. And it's not about having quote unquote likable characters, but it's about having characters. Period.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some sort of, I don't know.
And that's the difference is the strangers being based on this. The Strangers improved upon the idea by having these characters you could connect with. It's just not the scariness of it. It's the fact that you understand maybe being in a relationship and it's troublesome and all this other stuff. And they give you just enough of who Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman are. They don't just throw you right into like, here's the people and being like, who's Gina? You know what I mean? And all this other crap. And I'll be real. I was thinking like, okay, this is going to be ghosts or some kind, like the house is haunted or some kind of thing.
Oh.
And then the fact that it ends up being like children, I end up sitting there and then I'm going through the whole rest of the movie backwards in my head going like, well, what was with the car thing? Like, how were they able to lock and unlock the car? And I guess, yeah, they could have just taken the mother's keys. I didn't think about that. But I'm still sitting there going, like, how they lock and unlock the car? How many are there? Because one falls off a building, the other one gets bashed in the head, and the rest of the children have no response to it. Like, whatsoever. Like, oh, my God, you killed my friend. So, again, no emotional reaction from me watching that. You know, and then you're sitting there, and it is like these are little kids. Like, I think you're supposed to walk away from the movie because they're between 10 and 15, being like, oh, that's fucked up. But at the end of the day, it's like, I kind of agree with Eric, where it's like, would you just kick them in the face?
Right, they're just little kids.
They're little kids. Well, kick them in the head.
They didn't have like a bazooka. They didn't have.
And there's also filmic things to me that I'm like, oh, because again, watching so many horror movies, I'm like, oh, they're going to do this or go for this. And they don't. And I don't know if it's like clever or they just didn't think about it or how they were filming it. Like the fact that the trunk is open, the hood is open for so long. I'm like, that hood's going to drop and someone's standing in front of the car. It's totally going to happen.
Yes.
Yes.
The hood drops as a scare jump, but there's no one there.
Yeah.
And then the lights go out in the car again. I don't know how. That's why I was thinking like, oh, this is supernatural, but it's not. And then there's the peephole sequence where she's looking through the peephole and like they jam a nail or something into there.
Yeah.
And she grabs her, screwdriver, and she grabs her eye, and the camera is like positioned in a way where you don't see the front of her face. The guy runs into the room and we're still not seeing her face. And I'm like, oh, she's going to be like scratched or fucked up or something like that. And she turns.
Her eye's going to be out.
Well, not even like that, but something like, oh, she's scratched. She's fucked up. She's going to have to hold her eye for the rest of the movie. No. And I'm like, well, why did you film it where we couldn't see her face for like 5 minutes?
Yeah,
I wanted her eye to be poked out.
Me too.
Well, yeah, it's that slow reveal of, oh, fuck, look what they did to her. She's so beautiful, and now her eye's all fucked.
Yeah.
You know, but then it didn't happen.
And then, like, I don't know, I guess you're supposed to leave the movie being like, this is fucked up. But it's like the kid is, like, torturing her by being like, breathe into this grocery bag.
Oh, my God.
There were dirty socks in it before. Like, I don't know. I'm like, what's happening?
You're hurting her. Like, no, she's just, like, breathing in carbon dioxide. But I don't know if that hurts or...
They were trying to make a scenario for the boyfriend. Maybe they knew he was coming down after them, and so they were trying to, like, make the scenario that they were torturing her, and then there was the little boy that was going to help her. Like, oh, come follow me. But really, he was just setting her up to be killed anyway. Because he's with them.
Right.
So maybe it's just this, like, long scenario where they're just, like, super fucking with him.
Like, okay, she's a teacher. She should know firsthand that you can never trust a little kid.
That's true.
Like, oh, follow him. He'll lead us to, like, no, he won't. He's a little kid. They do whatever the hell they want. Come on.
That's good. Yeah, so it's surprising to me because, you know, this wasn't a, it wasn't like I just, said, oh, here's a movie I've never heard of, and I'll pick this one, because you know, looking around the web, it's pretty well regarded for the most part. It's not, you know, considered a classic, but it's like, oh man, them. If you got to see this foreign movie, blah blah blah, and you know, I saw it on several different lists, so I was like, oh shit, this must be a good one.
Yeah, they said it like scared the hell out of everyone in Europe.
Yeah, and so then I watched it and was like, fucking pussy Europeans, like, come on.
I mean, I could see if maybe you're in a dark theater, maybe this would be more effective, but maybe,
yeah, and
day,
it's
like,
an experience watch.
And like, if it was, like, if it's in your language.
Yeah.
Touché.
Do you think that has easier. Anything to do with it?
Because you have to put your attention on reading the words, and you can't just be in the moment. That's a lot different than hearing the words.
Hmm.
I feel like it redirects your attention.
Well, it's funny.
Totally be into the moment.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned earlier when we were talking about Scream about how you're not, you can watch things, but you don't like hearing them.
Yeah.
So since it's in a foreign language for you, like the audio doesn't have as much of an impact maybe as if it's in English.
Yeah,
probably.
So you're just like, oh, what are they saying? Instead of, holy shit, I can't hear this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I don't know. Like, I could still be pretty emotionally affected by, like, Old Boy or In the Mood for Love, these Japanese films.
Because Old Boy's great.
I haven't seen Old Boy yet.
It's a fucking great movie.
Watch it.
It's been a year, and I still haven't seen it.
But a movie like
that's
this,
why
like,
you're still
I don't know. A movie like this, like, I mean, clearly the characters aren't important, so I wouldn't say the dialogue is either. Most of the dialogue is them yelling each other's names.
That's true.
Yeah.
So foreign language or not, they're still basically just going, "Help! Help!" in the woods.
Luca! Luca!
And then there's the of that noisemaker.
Yeah, the fucking noisemaker. That didn't scare me, I was just irritated by it.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's that thing of, like, once it's revealed it's children, I'm like, so, I then start thinking the logics of it all, where, yeah. I talked about in Suspiria, where I'm like, I like horror movies because you can just do things to do them because they're creepy. But if you decided now to fit this in the real world where it's like, it's not ghosts, it's children, then I'm like, so the kids ran in and turned the TV on and ran out of the room?
Or where the fuck are their parents? How are they out all night if they're 10 to 15?
It's like Romania. I don't think they have parents.
They got on a school bus and they're enrolled in school.
Huh?
And which I think that was the other thing too, is once it was revealed it was kids, because again, we know nothing about these characters. All we know is she's a cool school teacher. I was like, oh shit, it's her students or some kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, which would have been maybe kind of lame to have it be connected. Like, it would be too much of a chance because, like, they make a point that she lives a half hour away. Mm-hmm. But at least that's something.
Yes.
It's some emotional connection. So I was like, once it was revealed it was children, I'm like, oh, it's going to be her students. This is fucked. No.
Just random.
It was the Lost Boys. It was Peter Pan's Lost Boys.
You know, it seemed like it should have been a weekend to me. Because when she's leaving, she's like, oh, you know, she's having conversations like, oh, okay, well, we'll see you when we get back, you know, blah, blah, blah. Kind of like a Friday to Monday sort of conversation with the other teacher. And then, you know, when it's the next morning and they're getting on the bus, I'm like, what? Like, because she was... You know, I figured we were the only ones that, hit the sauce on school nights. Yeah, you know, so I was like, oh, she's getting the wine and she's, you know, all up in her boyfriend's business or whatever. And I just kind of assumed it was like a date night for them, like a Friday or a Saturday or, you know, whatever. And turns out it's just like a Wednesday. Like, okay.
Oh, and then the ending too, where it's like, they do follow that one boy, and I'm like, why? Why do you trust this kid now? Just because he was like, don't put that bag on her mouth.
Right, exactly. That's what I was saying.
For like 2 seconds.
Yeah. And then he leads her to like a freeway, I guess, like gated freeway area, and she's, you know, screaming. Again, like, you would think, like, to me, again, it's kids, so it's not that super creepy, but I would think, like, you would pull back in the hallway and see, like, a bunch of kids coming towards her. No, it's just one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Kick him in the face.
Just punch him in the fucking face.
I just don't understand. I guess that's just the part where I'm like, yeah.
It's like the people that don't like Child's Play. It's a 2-foot doll, you know?
Right.
Just grab him and throw him away.
Yeah, but that's not how that's not how Chucky gets you.
Right, I know, but that's the complaints. You know?
Yeah.
It's just like
but I can refute those complaints.
I know,
right, it's
I know.
Chucky.
He pretends to be a doll. You pick him up and you're like, what the hell is this? And then, oh, he guts you in the gut. This is not like a child who's been chasing you for 12 hours that you're like, I know what this is.
Mm.
And there's that new one that's out, Annabelle.
Oh, yeah, the fucking...
It's a doll.
Doll. Brad thinks that's the funniest trailer because she's looking out the door and the doll just falls on the floor. He's like, really?
Yeah. Annabelle. Yeah, the Conjuring prequel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Barf. Anyway.
Barf. All right. Well, let's. Does anyone have anything else to say about that one?
The girl, that female is very attractive.
Yes, she is.
Agreed.
Yeah. I thought she was hot.
Strauss liked it for sure.
The guy. Much.
Let's move on to our last film, and it is the Frank Darabont directed 2007 film, The Mist.
Whoa!
Having spoken, the doomsayer departs.
What? Why don't you get Billy dressed? I'll take him into town with him. Hit the store before it gets all bought out.
How'd you folks hold up in the storm?
Big insurance day.
Sorry to hear that.
What's going on?
It's death.
Something in the mist! Shut the doors! Shut the doors!
The only way we're going to help ourselves is to seek rescue.
Tie this around your waist?
For four.
It'll let us know you got at least 300 feet.
There's nothing out there. Nothing in the mist.
What if you're wrong?
Then I guess... that
Chuck would be on me.
It is time to take sides. Read the good book. It calls for blood.
Guys, I hear something.
Are those bugs?
Not like any I've ever seen.
The entire front of this door is plate glass.
Messing with up there.
I thought that there were other dimensions. They wanted to try and make a window.
Well, maybe your window turned out to be a door.
Who she's gonna sacrifice to make it all better?
We want the boy.
You try it.
Kill him!
A violent storm hits a town in Maine. Then an approaching cloud of mist appears the next morning. As the mist quickly envelops the area, a group of people get trapped in a grocery store. Among them, artist David Drayton and his 5-year-old son. The people soon discover that within the mist lives numerous species of horrific, unworldly creatures that entered through an interdimensional rift, possibly caused by a project on a nearby military base. As the world around them turns into a literal hell on earth, the horrified citizens try desperately to survive this apocalyptic disaster.
All right, so this is The Mist. This is Cameron's selection. This was, for people that maybe only know a lot of these actors from The Walking Dead, hey, it's this guy.
It's Carol.
It's this girl. It's this person. So that was funny rewatching it. I was like, oh shit, that's right. There is a lot of people that Darabont worked with before. So Cameron, tell me
Tom Jane was going to be on The Walking Dead before they fired Darabont.
Yeah. Tell me about The Mist and why you selected this one.
The Mist, the year it came out, was my favorite movie that year, which was 2007. For me, I think The Mist is a Stephen King, short story that Darabont had wanted to make since the 80s. And then once he went and wrote Nightmare on Elm Street 3, he was weighing his options between making The Mist or Shawshank Redemption. And he decided on Shawshank. He decided on Shawshank, but The Mist was his passion project for years. And because he did Shawshank and then The Green Mile and like these hugely, respected Oscar-winning films, he was then, once The Mist rolls around, he had cachet now, and he was considered this elite director, but to him, he's always enjoyed and loved doing the horror movie thing. Like, horror movies was always, like, his first love. But because he was able to get that cachet, he was then able to bring in actors who are not normally horror movie actors, like your Andre Brower mm-hmm. or your Marsha Gay Harden and stuff like that. I don't know. Like, I love The Mist. I think The Mist, to me, is wonderful human kind of story. It's very dark and bleak, but it's not about the effects. It's not about the death. It's not about the gore and all that stuff. It's very much about characters dealing with characters. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a play. It kind of has that Petrified Forest thing of like mm-hmm. people stuck in a room having to deal with each other and what happens when society around you crumbles. And Darabont talked about that to him, Shawshank was so much about hope and trying to continue to hope when all this bad stuff is happening around you. And he did an interview recently where he talked about going from that to The Mist. The Mist comes out after 9/11. We're in two wars. All this other stuff is happening that he's looking around the world. And he said in the 90s, I was very hopeful. Once it hit the mid 2000s, he's like, I just was like, this is all fucked.
Which makes sense that he agreed to take on The Walking Dead.
Yes. Yeah. And this was a movie that he'd been trying to make for a while. I think the other thing that's interesting to note is this was filmed very differently than his other film. And the fact that it's so handheld, he filmed a couple episodes of The Shield, mm-hmm. To have an understanding of handheld filmmaking. Cause he knew that this movie would have to be made quickly and cheaply because of how dark the ending is, that right. no studio would spend a lot of money. So therefore, to be able to make the movie he wanted to make, it had to be done very quickly. And he talks about that filming it in that way is great. Filming it because it's very quick. The actors are fresh. They filmed this movie in 20 days. Like, it is a quickly made movie. He said, but it bites you in the butt in the editing room because every shot is different. So trying to create a continuity is difficult. I think I also love this movie because, like, for me, I'm a giant Stephen King fan, and this, though it's still very much Frank Darabont film and it's his sensibilities, it's probably one of the best translations of, like, King to film. Like, who his characters are and the worlds he plays with and how the characters speak. It feels like a perfect translation from book to screen with King. It's like this and Christine, and there's a couple of other films where you're watching and going, yes, this is still the director's film, but this also does feel like a King work. And it's interesting to compare it to The Shining, whereas The Shining was a very, we talked about, like, cold, distant kind of film. This is all about emotion and human interaction.
Yeah, it's true. It's interesting that when you actually look at Stephen King, and you mentioned this in the first episode of this, Cameron, but it's interesting to note how much religion is in his work. You know, there's a lot of, there's Carrie, there's The Mist, there seems like he's either attacking religion or has something to say about people that are religious.
I think to some extent I don't think he's anti-religion. I think he's anti people who lack reason. And it's like, not saying if you're religious, people,
right.
if anyone who's fanatical in any way.
So like the character.
Yeah.
And her cult.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be very easy for people to watch this kind of movie and go, this is so unrealistic. Not talking about the monsters, but how people interact with this. It's so unrealistic, so blah, blah, blah. No one would be like this and so on and so forth. But I think if you do enough research and read enough of the news, you look at, like, how people act in a mob mentality or the things people do to each other when emotions run high.
I think it's very believable.
Yeah, there was this news story, I think, last year about in Brazil. This soccer referee who killed a soccer player on the field, and the crowd went crazy and stoned the referee to death and then disemboweled him and put his head on a spike.
Seems fair.
How did he kill the soccer player in the first place?
He stabbed him.
Okay.
So you read stories like that, and then you see this, and, you know, it doesn't feel that unbelievable that people would react very quickly to fear and everything that's happening around them. And even though this short story was written in the 80s, I feel like for Darabont, this was his response to the world of 9/11, whereas King wrote Cell, which is another book about a massive event happens and how do people interact with each other. And though Cell is a far more globe-trotting, travel around kind of book, it is like people are in a daze and there's fear and all this other stuff.
Yeah, I feel like people, especially with the religious lady, people want to have an answer and they want to have something to believe in. So even though she was crazy, that's why I can see that the majority was flocking to her.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting about that character too, is that if you came to this movie from a certain perspective, you could say she was right.
Oh yeah.
Everything she says happens. The ending is very dark for our main characters. Everything she says is correct in the sense where she goes, I told you the creatures were going to come back tonight. And if you are a closed-minded person, you can look and go, well, yeah, she was right. But if you are maybe a more rational person, you could look at reason and go, well, yeah, it would logistically they would come back. You just happened to be correct.
Yeah, I thought for a little bit that, like, it was going to go that way. Because, like, those bugs – I don't know what a locust looks like, and to be honest with you. So I thought, like, we were going to get locusts. And then I'm like, oh, maybe we'll get whatever – you know, whatever the plagues were in the Bible. And then I'm like, oh, no, that looks like a pterodactyl. So, no, that's not right. That's not
well, this for me is also, I think the reason I love this movie, too, is it's the closest we probably will get to, like, an H.P. Lovecraft kind of movie.
Sure.
With these giant, like, Cthulhu-like creatures. Like, that sequence in the end when they're driving down the road and that giant thing is just walking across.
Oh, that part?
The thing from Star Wars?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. It does look like the thing from Star Wars.
But they treat it like a whale because those pterodactyl creatures are flying around it.
Yeah.
Almost how guppies eat around a whale.
Yeah.
So Cruz, enlighten me. What did you think of The Mist?
The human interaction part was obviously the most interesting to me. It was a very weird turn of events to go from these three movies to something with tentacles.
Mm.
And so I was like, what in the hell is this? So, I wasn't like the biggest fan of like the, things that were outside, but I understand that obviously that wasn't the most important part of the movie.
Well, it's also like what Darabont had said is that growing up in the 50s and 60s, sci-fi movies with like creatures and all these monsters are coming and this, that, and the other, those tended to be like, at the end of the day, movies about fear of communism or fear of the changing world, fear of nuclear power, and they just happen to use monsters for their allegory. So for him, he said like he wanted to return to that kind of thing of like, oh, tentacle creatures and aliens and blah, 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 but I'm saying something. But what I'm saying here is rather than be like a big idea about nuclear weapons and fear of communism, it's going to be about what do human beings act like when society comes crashing down and there's no more electricity or rules or anything like that. Who turns into maniacs and who tries to keep the rational mind?
Hmm.
Right. Well, yes. And I understand that, but I don't know. Like, I always get caught up in that, like, where you have the option to have that part of the movie be basically anything. And then I always get caught up in, like, why in the hell is it something like this where you could have, like, anything you wanted? And the ironic part was when I was looking up them, they had a movie from the 1950s that was about, like, people trapped somewhere and they were, like, mutated. And I was like, oh, weird, but I don't know. I mean, like, that didn't take away from the movie or anything for me. I actually love that the Walking Dead people are in there because I am a huge Walking Dead fan. And it was hilarious to me that, I'm not going to spoil anything, but that some people lived and some people didn't. And so, I'm just saying.
Hmm.
It's like, oh, that makes sense.
What did you make of the end, Cruz? I feel like this is a very Eric ending, not a very Rachel ending.
Yes, and I said that under my breath when I watched it. That's one of the most Eric endings ever.
Hmm.
I feel like I guess like in my brain when they were sitting there, like they should have just. And I guess that's the ironic part that they didn't wait long enough for, you know, the cavalry to show up, but like. They run out of gas and then immediately they're like, bam, 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 bam. Like, you could have like had a chat or something, or I don't know. But, then there was just a lot of yelling out of his mouth. I don't know.
He's doing like his Jack Torrance is what Thomas Jane.
Right. Yes.
Cause
it's like, he kills those people and then literally 5 minutes later, the mist like dissipates and everything's fine.
Oh, that's the real kick in the balls.
Right, it is a real kick in the balls. I feel like it was his own fault, kind of, so I don't feel too sorry for him.
Interesting.
He should have waited.
Strauss, I know that this was one that you were eager to talk about, so what is it that you have to say about The Mist? What did you think of it, first of all?
I thought it was fun. Like, I thought the scary parts were fun, but... And I hated the religious lady. I'm not saying I hate religion. She was just super annoying. And
I thought, she's supposed to be super annoying. I mean, she's Marcia Gay Harden is tremendous in this.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. Well.
I think everyone is. This is an acting showcase. Like, Toby Jones is Ollie.
That was the sharpshooter.
I like him, though.
I think it's great. I love his line of dialogue where the store manager comes in. He's like, I'm going to take everyone's name down. And he goes, yeah, okay, you do that. You take everyone's name down right now. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
right?
He's like, I'm growing some balls now, so shut the fuck up.
Right.
Yeah. I like how he saved the day a few times.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a nice bit of casting because he's just this meek little guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he's the sharpshooter, and no one would expect that out of him. And all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the ending was really hard for me. It was just, I was not expecting that at all. And so when it happened, I was, you know, just heartbroken.
Mm.
Like, oh, really? He has to be alive knowing that he, you know, I don't know how much of this we're spoiling.
No,
I think we should. I think it's,
spoiler.
Okay. I was trying not to spoil Walking Dead. Sorry.
Oh, well.
I spoiled Sons of Anarchy once, and I didn't apparently live that one down, so.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
For to kill your own child, like, I can't even fathom that. But I guess if there were to be an animal, like, I asked Eric, I was like, what would you do? Would you kill us if there was going to be an animal to come? And he's like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to talk about that. So
you have to think about, to me, I think the ending's perfect.
Okay. Well, like, if there were an animal running up to the car or whatever they are and about ready to rip my daughter, son's, whatever, head off, sure, I would want them not to suffer. But nothing was happening at the time.
That's what I'm saying.
They were, like, hearing noises, and until you see something...
Yeah, but they'd already lived through the proof of what those noises were going to...
It's true.
And it's also the proof that you don't know what else is... And it's also, you don't know if your child is going to be taken by a giant creature that's going to eat them in one moment, or a spider that's going to spit acid webs, or a pterodactyl that's going to bite at them slowly, or a tentacle that's going to rip off their flesh chunk by chunk.
And I feel like they could have waited. Seconds.
I think from a storytelling perspective, the circular thing of he spends this whole movie trying to protect his son, and his son breaks down right after the pharmacy, and he promises his son he's not going to go anywhere.
He promises his son he won't let the monsters get him.
Technically,
and he didn't.
And his son wakes up, and it's not just that he shoots his child. It's that there's that shot of the child waking up and looking at his father. Mm-hmm. And he has to look his child in the face as he shoots him in the head.
Yeah.
It's very bleak. It's very dark, but it's confrontational. And I think for what this movie is trying to say about human interactions and what do you do when society has failed, it's the right ending. I think having them drive off and then it's like, oh, we made it, would feel like a lie.
Well, yeah. Absolutely, because otherwise, what's the film about? It's just about these creatures that happen to come in and then they go away.
It's these creatures that happen to come in and this woman's annoying.
Yeah, and so I think what I think is so good about it is you're with this group. You don't know what's going on. You don't know the actual story. Like, you don't know how they got there, how this mist showed up, what the military's doing about it, if it's only in this one location. Like, you don't know anything. All you know is these people and how they're interacting with each other. And what I love about it is Andre Brouwer and Thomas Jane are getting along, and they're, you know that they have a troubled history, but they're getting along. And then something, an obstacle comes up, you know, the tentacle comes and kills a guy, and he doesn't buy it. And then it's all the pretenses are gone.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I don't like you. It's like, I do have a problem with you. And it's not the sort of action hero, you know, cop movie. I'm going to stick it out with my friend and the two of us are going to, we're going to do
it. Work together.
Yeah. It's back to back and we're going to fix everything. It's, you know, I've got my family that I'm sticking with and fuck all y'all. You know, that's the sort of mentality that people initially had, and then they slowly started making their own little groups and trying to collect people that were like-minded.
Like a Lord of the Flies thing.
Yeah, very much.
And it's the thing, too, of the fact that it's that interesting layers of Marsha Gay Harden is like, this is all happening because of this. And Thomas Jane and his group are like, you're full of shit, but this is still happening. And Andre Brouwer's group is like, none of this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a mist. You people are full of shit, everyone. And the fact that it's like there's all these little human interactions and what are you going to do in certain elements, like the guy who gets burnt really badly.
Oh, yeah.
And what are they going to do about that? The people who commit suicide in the store because they're not willing to face what's happening. And I think for me, I think the ending works as far as thinking like the hopelessness and the killing themselves, because they make it fairly clear that this movie – takes place in like the main area, because that's where all Stephen King stuff takes place,
right.
Except for The Shining. So they drive from Maine to, we see a freeway sign that says Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how far the mist has gotten. And I think it's like you've seen people be ripped apart. You've been covered in other people's blood. You've all turned on each other in less than 36, 48 hours. I think that ending works because I feel like the movie makes it fairly clear that it's like, you're not going to get out of here.
There's no driving away. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think the Disney ending would have worked.
Oh, I agree. Like, this is definitely a movie where it was impactful. Like, I'll remember this movie because of the emotional impact at the end. I also love the lady with the short hair at the beginning.
Carol.
Carol from The Walking Dead. Yeah.
Sorry, a.k.a. Carol. says, nobody will walk a woman home or walk a lady home.
Yeah.
And then she is on
She's the on bus convoy.
At the end and with her two kids.
How did she get home?
Yeah, why did she get to go home? How did she get to make it? You know?
She had a flamethrower.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's an unknowable thing. She made it.
Maybe, but is it more of a thing where is she pure at heart so they let her go? Or
I don't know, because there's the guy before her who runs to his car and gets covered in the mist, and then all you hear is the screaming.
Yeah.
The biker guy?
Yeah.
Well, so, no, not the biker guy. It's this other guy. The biker guy.
The initial one, like right at the beginning where he's like, I'm going to my car. Screw you guys.
Yeah, well, he seems a little harsh. I feel like she was pure at heart.
Oh, so the reason that she left was because she wanted to go get her kids, and that's why the mist let her go?
Maybe. I don't know.
I love the sacrificing of the soldier.
Mm.
Oh, shit.
And
I think this movie does a really good job of where he's pleading with all of them, going like, you know me, I grew up here.
But they needed to place the blame on someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, I'm, like, watching this, thinking about where I would be. I would obviously be in the liquor aisle, first and foremost.
Oh.
Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to decide, like, obviously I wouldn't be with the religious fanatics, because, like, no, I feel like no matter what, I would think that lady needed to calm down. But, like, I can't just, like, I honestly feel like I would just, like, try to find two other people and just, like, hang out in the corner.
Yeah.
I don't think I would be super helpful, to be honest. Well,
Cruz, I think you'd be drunk and you'd be in with Thomas Jane's group. Like, shit, this is happening. What do we do? I don't know. I'm drinking this alcohol. We're doing it. I'm in.
He's like, Cruz, we got to go to the pharmacy. Why? Is there liquor there? Like,
yeah, Cruz, awesome. There's a bunch of pills there. Let's go. All right. Yeah, let's do it.
I like the guy. I like the guy who has spiders in him.
Ew, that part was really gross.
That was unfortunate.
Yeah, at that point, that's where I'm like, no, it totally makes sense to kill yourself at the end of this because you might get spiders in your body. Yeah.
One of the people that I was like really disappointed in was the redneck guy.
Oh, I wanted him to die so bad.
Oh, William Sadler.
Even when he's trying to help, he fucks it up.
Yeah.
And then he just, I mean, like, it's just like such an ignorant thing to like see something and then like immediately like do a 180. And, like, he's front row in that lady's little church in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, yes, no, now I get it, blah, blah, blah. Like,
poser.
Well, yeah. I think what's interesting about that, though, what I think is interesting is they make sure to point out that that little group isn't the smartest group.
Right.
You know, and then he quickly seeks out.
Drinks the Kool-Aid.
He seeks out a higher being. He buys into all the religion. And so while I think that that's not a completely obvious poke at people that are very religious, I think it is there enough to where it's like, oh, look how silly they are.
Well, and it's not the fact that you can't, you know, turn to religion. It's the fact that this is what pisses me off the most as a, you know, person who does, you know, believe in God, that she
too
is using it and like verbatim out of her mouth. She was like, you who like they're like stomping on it, and she's like obviously being a hypocrite on like everything that people who actually are religious are supposed to stand for. Like, don't be a bitch, first of all.
Yeah,
like don't be pretentious, don't judge other people horribly. Like when she said that she could shit out that girl, I'm like, okay, you're obviously not a religious person in the right way.
Yeah, she was saying that she was the portal, so she wasn't, you know. She was wanting to take the power.
Right.
Praise, at the end, that's exactly what you're not supposed to do.
Yeah, it didn't have anything to do with, like, her, like, you know, turning to God or whatever. It was like,
I'm using this
group of people to help me control everyone else.
Well, it's that cult mentality thing. The way culture started is you take people who are, and they call her Jim Jones. Like, they basically call it out, like, who she's supposed to be, like, cults work by taking people who are either scared or have no direction and you offer them an answer.
Right.
And you can simultaneously be like, I am a vessel, but like, I don't think she's full of shit. Like, she truly believes what she's saying.
Yeah, that's the scary part.
And I think it's also the thing of, you know, like, you, like, it's very easy, I think, to look at, like, the William Sadler character and go, oh my God, how could he flip so quickly? And I would just say, like, I would throw out famous people like Dennis Miller and David Zucker, who 9/11 happens and they're like, hardcore, let's attack the Middle East Republicans in like a day.
Well, that's just human weakness. That's
yes.
Just,
oh yeah, no, I know that has nothing to do with religion, but I think that's why that character, it's that fear and I'm seeking answers and I just saw spiders explode out of a human being.
Right. I understand that he went through sort of a shock, but a lot of people saw that and he was the only one that decided to become a zealot within an hour.
Yes, but I think, I don't know, like, that rings true to me. And actually, they make a point that after that scene, Thomas Jane passes out, and then when he wakes up, he goes, how long have I been out? And they said, you've been out most of the day.
Okay. And so it took him most of the day to flip a 180. Gotcha.
But I think that's believable. I think, and also, this movie cannot take place over the course of weeks.
Yeah. It wouldn't work.
Well, yeah. They'd start eating each other.
Yeah, there would be, like, two people left.
Well, I'd hope not. There's got a whole fucking shitload of food in there.
I know.
I was thinking that, too. I'd be like, okay, well, I would get, like a little corner and get, like, a bunch of, like, chips. It wouldn't be, like, that bad.
Like, look, they've got a little book aisle, I'm sure.
Right?
I'll just sit and read and get drunk and eat.
Do some crosswords. And then, like, build, like, myself a little fort of, like, manure or whatever the hell that was, charcoal, for when, like, they come flying in, I'm set.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think my favorite scene probably in the film is the scene when they're all talking in the back in the dark. And it's the scene where they basically break down who Marcia Gay Harden's character is. And Laurie Holden's character is talking about, like, no, people aren't like that. People are rational, this, that, and the other. And Thomas Jane's line about, like, yeah, because there's laws, but you take away electricity, yeah, throw them in the dark and take away the rules and watch them tear each other apart.
Yeah, which is basically the basis of this movie.
Sure. Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's a film that I think, Cameron said that it was his favorite of 07. I think for me, it's a film that this is probably the third or the fourth time I've seen it. And each time I watch it, I'm like, damn, that's good. Like, why don't I have that yet? And she shakes her head.
Because we don't need it.
Yeah. And so then weeks or months will pass and I'll kind of forget about it. And then it'll get brought up again or I'll see it on Netflix or whatever on the discs and I'll be like, oh yeah, The Mist. That's really good. That's a really good movie. But for whatever reason, I love the end, of course, just because of the way that I'm.
Everybody dies.
Yeah, just because of the way that I'm put together.
Grumpy old man.
And so. But I don't know what it is. Like, I just kind of forget about it a little bit. And it's kind of like, I wish I wouldn't do that. It kind of is a little upsetting.
Well, I hadn't heard of this movie until now.
Yeah, oh. I haven't seen. This was the first watch for me, for reals.
For
his. Like, I'm not a big Stephen King fan. I'm not a fan, but I mean, like, I'm not. I haven't read, like, a lot of his books, and I had no idea what this was about, so.
Hmm.
I don't know if it had, like, a big premiere or whatever, but
it came out in October. It came out around Halloween, but it made its money back, but it didn't do incredibly well. And that's why he knew what he said when he was making the movie, that's like the ending would get to some people. And yeah. I mean, critics love the movie, but it took a while for a studio to want to make it because of the ending.
Sure.
And I think it's just, it's, I saw this in the theater, like with a half packed house. But when that ending hit, you could just feel like half the crowd was with it and half the crowd was pissed.
What the fuck?
But I think, if you, again, like I've talked to Eric about before, is like movies don't exist in a bubble. You sometimes do have to take into account what was happening in the world when this movie was being made and came out. The very last line of the movie, the final line, is Thomas Jane on his knees and he says, they're all dead for what? And I think if you look at where the world was in 06 when this movie was being made, I think if you are a rational, thinking human being, you probably are looking around going like, what is going on and why? Because now in 2014, we live in a very, it's only 7 years, but we live in a very different world. In 2007, being gay was next to being illegal.
Yeah.
Now he would, the last line would be, turned down for what?
Jesus.
And then we would all just do like zombie dance.
I'm definitely glad I saw this one.
Yeah.
I like it.
It was definitely, yeah. The more you think about it, the more you're like, Jesus.
And yeah, I've caught myself just like, damn.
I think because like the way it was filmed was 20 days, they all were on that set. You know, it's like it was filmed almost like a play where it's like they're all together, you know, as opposed to like you're in different locations. So we're going to film you two today. And then in a week later, we'll film this other person and blah, blah, blah. It was filmed so quickly. So the actors were all constantly interacting with each other in scenes with each other. So everyone got to be on the same level acting wise. You got to be different characters and stuff like that, but everyone got to be a similar pitch that worked for the movie. Cause I mean, even talking about, you know, I know you did Last Summer and a lot of horror movies we talk about, some people are better than other people and some people seem to be in completely different movies than the other person they're with.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. All right. Well, do we have anything else to say about The Mist before we wrap this one up? Strauss, how about you?
Nope.
You're good. Cruz, what about you?
It was a little weird, but I'm glad I watched it.
All right. Well, Cruz, how did you feel about these, about the horror? Because you had mentioned a few
the
times that you're not a huge horror person. So how did this month treat you?
I did okay. There wasn't one where I, like, had to sleep with the lights on, and I'm actually pretty proud of myself for that, because that has been done before. So I don't think, I think that we did mostly good ones, and I don't know. It was good times.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun.
Yeah. Cameron, do you have anything else about The Mist?
Let me ask Eric, have you seen the black and white version?
No, I heard that he wanted to do it black and white, but that was part of the concession that to make the ending that he wanted to make, it had to be in color.
Yeah, so I don't. It got released on DVD and Blu-ray, and they basically did what they did with The Man with No Name,
or
the Billy Bob Thornton Coen Brothers movie, where yeah, they then edited and put it in black and white. It's very interesting. And actually, if anybody watches The Mist and goes like, "Well, the CGI is not great," the black and white makes it look much better.
Yeah, because the tentacle attack is not great.
But, I mean, when that guy's chest gets ripped open and blood goes everywhere, yeah. I will say, maybe the tentacle doesn't look great, at least it's not CG blood.
There you go.
That guy was also in Can't Hardly Wait, by the way.
Yes, he was.
Yes, he was.
Nut.
All right, well,
bringing it all back together.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is a really strong film, I think, to end on. Because I think that it does what a good horror film should do, to where it does scare you, but it also does make you think of things outside of who's going to die and who's going to survive.
Right.
And so I think that's really successful.
There's Darabont did recently did an interview with Mick Garris. Mick Garris directed the Shining television version. Mick Garris is now doing an interview show with a lot of interviews with a lot of the directors we've talked about. And when it came to talking about The Mist, you know, Darabont said, like, you know, the horror movies he used to respect, horror movies didn't mind looking at the audience and going, fuck you, as an ending. And he goes, and now they are. He's like, I didn't want to do that. Because if you look at movies like Carrie and stuff like that, there is the jump scare, but it's also like these dramatic things happen in the end that leave the audience going like, what? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like that.
Fuck you.
I like that. I'm always good for a fuck you at the end of a movie.
Yeah.
But it has to work. It can also be a cliche of indie films if everything ends sad. That's its own cliche.
Yeah.
You know, it's its own cliche to be like, this character committed suicide. Credits. It's like, you know, it's just as cliche in Hollywood to be like, everything worked out and everyone's getting along and she's going to college. In indie film, it's just as cliche to be like, he died of a heroin overdose.
Yeah. He didn't do heroin during the whole movie. What happened?
That is equally a cliche.
Yeah. There we go. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it. So if you have any comments for the show or movies that you would like to hear us talk about, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle at PlainLabelPod. You could follow me over there. I'm at EricWilliams79. And Rachel is at LadyZlag. We also have a Facebook page for the show where you could like it. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. If you enjoyed the show and wanted to help us out, you could head over to our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. Over there, you're going to find a little Amazon box on the right-hand side. If you click on that link, it'll take you to Amazon's homepage, and I would like you to bookmark that new homepage. Delete your old one. Just use this new one. Mm-hmm. And what it does is, anytime you buy anything from Amazon, it helps us pay for our rentals of movies like them. It helps us pay for our Netflix. It helps us pay for all kinds of stuff. So that would be wonderful.
Did everyone have to pay for them? Did everyone else have to pay for them?
Yep.
I did.
Oh, I watched it on Hulu for free.
Oh, no. That's right. We watched it on Hulu.
Oh, I don't have Hulu.
Trial for
yeah.
a week.
Yeah. Oh, I got to end my trial tonight.
Nice.
good call.
Good remembering.
Good call.
Good call. I have an Amazon gift card. So,
Cameron, if people wanted to get a hold of you, where could they find you?
They can go to twitter.com/JurassicAlien. I mentioned it last week, but actually, Will, we finally got all the kinks worked out. This Friday, Geek Flashback will be premiering, and that's with Ninja Turtles. And then Monday, me and Eric's really freaking filmographies will be dropping.
There we go.
Dropping like it's hot.
Strauss, what about you? Where could they find you online?
At Anel Elizabeth.
Yeah. And they could find you around these parts as of late with Enemy and Fed Up and these shows and childhood favorites as well.
Yeah.
Right? All right. Well, thank you for listening. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with our new theme.